No.
And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, depending on where you sit in our world. And thank you for joining me today for my portion of Analyze Your Trade. And a little background on me, so maybe you'll then be able to kind of ask what you would like to take a look at. The basis of my analysis has always been Elliott Wave principle or Elliott Wave theory, which I use very extensively no matter what I'm looking at. And then I also include Fibonacci. And together, those two have proved to keep me in line with what the markets are doing and give me a little bit of an insight into where they may be going and what I might expect to come next. So I've been using Elliott since I learned Elliott 1988, 1989, and I immediately started applying it to my own trading. A little history on me and my trading. I started as an options market maker, and I started here in San Francisco, where I still live. And I have been a member of the Pacific Exchange, the London Traded Options Market, the European Options Exchange, which was in Amsterdam, and also the DTB in Germany, which was my first walk into or learning experience with totally electronic trading. And that was with the DTB. And I did that from my office in Amsterdam. It was interesting, a good start, actually. On my return back here to the United States, because I lived in Amsterdam for 10 years, I came back in 1997 and I returned to the PSE, and it was really great. It was right, at the turn of the millennium, and it was great trading, and we were cruising to, because the Pacific was tech heavy, I will say. We had exclusives on a lot of the big tech companies, Microsoft being one. Compaq Computer back in the day. We just had Micron. We had a lot of technology stocks, and it was a great place to be. But as things became more electronic and people started moving off the floor and market making really was being taken off the floor, it got really slow and it got really boring. And I decided, oh, that was time for me to leave. And so in about 2000, 2001, I left the floor. And that's when I came back to my own home and I set up my office and I continued to trade. In about 2013, I made a decision that I no longer wanted to trade options because the volatility in those options was very unpredictable. And I didn't really care about taking the overnight risk that I did as a market maker. So I became a day trader. And that's where I've remained for the last 10 years. I've been day trading, and my primary focus are the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100, their futures. I have drifted over and I've done in other markets, but I tend to hang with the S&P and the NASDAQ just because I really do like them. I don't trade Forex. I have a passion for gold. I will share that with you. And so I've always had positions in gold. But again, I'm now retired. Officially, in the United States lets you retire when you reach the ripe old age of 66. And so I was determined that I would actually do that. I did retire early, but officially claimed my Social Security when I turned 66. So today I continue to trade from my home office, but I also provide analysis. And then, of course, it's Elliott Wave. And so I have a couple of channels on YouTube that I post each day. Actually, Sunday through Thursday, I post an Elliott Wave update. And that would be for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. And then usually over the weekend, at some point, I attempt to make what I call the Eye of the Storm podcast, which is a little bit longer presentation, but it covers the S&P 500, the NASDAQ 100, the treasury markets, gold and silver, and the dollar. And so I still actually do Elliott on all of those markets as well. And it's been a very, very interesting 9 months since the October 2022 low. So where I can start just to kind of get the ball rolling is to take a quick look at the S&P, everybody's favorite index, possibly. Don't know that for certain. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start on my weekly chart. It's going to get very crowded up here because that's all the current action, and the labeling is very detailed in terms of degrees. Now, for those of you that don't have any background in Elliott Wave, Elliott Wave is a methodical, it's a more of a science and an art on how we analyze a market. And Elliott Wave does not cover any fundamental changes, earnings reports, economic reports, data. Couldn't tell you anything about that in terms of how that will affect a market. I mean, I know just from being a trader what I can expect. But Elliott Wave, on the other hand, what it does measure is the human emotional response to the markets. And that is very unique because, for example, we get an interest rate hike, or we get an interest rate ease, or we get an interest rate pause. Is it really the fact, the action, or is it the interpretation by all the algorithms that are in operation now that read the news, or just human beings that then interpret the action that the Fed may or may not be doing as bullish or bearish, and then they choose their trade based on that? So again, Elliott's never going to say, well, hey, we got another hike that you could see because the market, you know, demonstrated. It becomes more of where the market may be sitting in your Elliott Wave count. For example, if you're sitting at a high, at a top, you're going to be looking for a corrective phase. And most of the time, I sit there and I could say, well, I couldn't tell you what's going to kick off that corrective phase. In fact, I could come from my very long-term weekly chart. So things operate in degrees. So let me kind of start telling you about what Elliott is. And there are two basic moves or wave patterns. And one, the first one is an impulse pattern. And that's always going to be labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there are five waves within an impulse move or structure. Now that complete move would include five waves, either up or down, followed by a corrective phase, which is going to be labeled ABC. And so having an understanding that Elliott Wave is a series of building blocks. So whether I start on my monthly chart here, which this one goes all the way back to 1983, and if I go to the cash S&P, which is the SPX, that goes all the way back to 1928. That's a lot of data. So you can see here that Elliott also delivered us to what he called degrees. Now, remember what I just said, that Elliott Wave is our building blocks. So that first five waves up, three waves down is actually going to be waves 1 and 2 of a degree. And so when you're starting here and you start with your, Elliott always told us, it's like you try to start with your as most the largest chart you can get with the most information, the most data, but you know, and you start by counting, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or, you know, you fill in your blanks. And so I started, and this is based on Elliott's work, actually, that I started with a super cycle. So again, what we need to understand is how that plays out. So the smallest one that I'm including in all my charts is a sub minuet. And then you have a minute. And then we have a minor, an intermediate, a primary, a cycle, and a super cycle. So here's the other key. All moves, so all of the degrees, will be operating in the same cycle. So in other words, if it's an impulse wave or a corrective wave, all subsequent degrees below it will be operating in that same cycle. It's the same way. So they'll all be in corrective moves. So in other words, if I'm counting a super cycle, for example, I had a super cycle wave 3 that actually began, this is a good example, in 1932 at the June lows of 1932. And that was about $4.40. You can see over on this level. Now, that super cycle wave 3 completed up here in January of 2022. And that was at 4,000. Let me go up there and just kind of take a peek. That was at 4,818 right there. So that was 90 years. Now, So what did it take to get up to that level? Let me go back out to that big chart. Well, if that was supercycle, we have to go down and like, what's going to be inside supercycle wave three? Well, five waves of cycle degree. And here they are. 1, 2, 3, 4. And the five is kind of buried, but it's up there. Same level, the all-time high. What's going to be inside cycle wave one? Five waves of primary degree. A little bit too crunched together for me to show it, but let's go to the same one. What's going to be inside of supercycle wave three, or cycle wave three, excuse me? Five waves of primary degree. Those are labeled in the green. So I show you my color scheme here, and I remain the same no matter what time frame I'm working on. They're constantly going to be, these are the color codes that I use. So as you'll see, when I start to count down, and I'm now going to be coming to my daily chart, well, we don't have the largest I can show you is that primary degree, because that's the largest degree that we're actually working in right now. If I take this out to just a three-year weekly chart, you see here's the all-time high. So what we have is a supercycle wave three, and what was underneath it? A cycle five, a primary five, and an intermediate five. All those waves completed at that level, and that finished a large move. So from that point on forward, we have now been in a corrective phase. Now, remember, I just said in an impulse phase, it's always five waves. That's an impulse, five waves. So that's what we counted all the way up to that high. On a supercycle wave three, we counted five waves up of cycle degree. Now we're in a supercycle wave four correction, which is going to consist of an ABC on a cycle level. And then what's going to be in that cycle A? Because they're going to be labeled ABC. Well, in cycle wave A is going to be a primary degree ABC. There we have the A. We're working on finishing up the B. So we haven't even really completed the first larger leg of this longer-term correction. And boy, has all everything swung and moved, and oh, the inflation's dead. Oh, we're in a new bull market. We got that one right about there, where they declared that this was a new bull market because the S&P had gained 20%, had moved 20% off that low. That was a new one for me because I'm like, really? Who made that one up? You know, bull markets are usually much more involved and form in a much different manner than in everything that's going on in our economy and in the world right now. So, but anyway, you know, you trade what you can trade. So in any case, what we're involved in right now is this initial cycle degree A wave down. And what is it going to consist of? Three waves labeled ABC of primary degree. There's primary wave A. So when we look at this, what's going to be inside primary wave A? Well, three waves of intermediate degree labeled ABC. A, B, C. There's our A. So now we're in a primary B wave. Well, what's going to be inside that primary B wave? Again, three waves of intermediate degree labeled A, B, and we're in the C. Now, some other things that Elliot told us, that all C waves, here's one, here's one, no matter what degree, all C waves must be five waves. That's kind of a rule. So we have some basic rules and we have guidelines. And when we put them together, we should come up with an accurate count. Now, what the count is really going to be showing us is the basically emotional development of the overall move. And when we consider that we topped, and if you remember, you go back, if you were trading back in 2020, we were coming off of the pandemic, the initial shock of the pandemic, and we were coming off of that low in March of 2020. And at that same time, if we remember, the government had to bail us citizens out because we went into a lockdown, a nationwide and international-wide lockdown. We couldn't leave the house. We had to have protection. We couldn't do a lot of things. And so many people had no income. So interest rates got cut, and cut again, and basically dropped to almost zero. We had a zero interest rate policy that was in place way before that pandemic, but got kicked back in as that pandemic took hold. So interest rates dramatically dropped, and money called stimulus got pushed into our system. Well, a lot of it went into the markets. And it was just a natural process of the additional capital or the stimulus that was being pumped in. It had to be put to work. It had to be traded. And that's what happened. And it was a straight up bull market, but it was a finishing move on 1, 2, 3 degrees. And so it goes from intermediate to primary to cycle. Those are fairly large. I mean, I can go back out to my monthly chart and show you cycle wave 4. That was the 2009 low. This, believe it or not, if you were around, that's the great financial collapse. Here's the crash of 29, right? There's the first leg. That was the one that everybody's jumping out the windows about. Then we had a little rally, but the depressing crash, the depression, was in 1931 into 1932. That was the one that crushed and killed anything that was left. The initial October 29th, yeah, it was pretty severe, but it was the secondary crash, as Eliot called it. And that was this one that knocked it all out of the pool. Here, the great financial collapse. Let me show you also, that's 1987. Catch that. That's 1987. The great crash of October 19th, 1987. I was not physically on the floor on that particular day. I was traveling from Amsterdam over to London, but still, it was at the end of that day, October the 19th, the Dow was down 572 points, and that was stunning. That was like, oh my God, you know, the world is coming to an end. Now, what's so funny is when you go and you look at it again, there it is. It's a blip. So then we finish up our cycle wave 3. We go into a cycle wave 4, which was at the turn of the millennium. So here is basically 2000. We start with a decline. So again, if we're finishing cycle wave 3 and primary wave 5, what comes next? A primary degree ABC to finish a cycle wave 4. Now, this is interesting because we're basically almost confronting the same type of situation again. Now, again, this is the SPX, but if I went over and looked at the Dow, we declined, we rallied back up to, in this case, the existing high in the S&P, but the Dow moved to a new all-time high against basically negative momentum, negative what was happening in the economy, et cetera, et cetera. We had hints. Right, this high is October of 2007. The proverbial poop hit the fan in 2008, right? So that would have been August of 2008. And then we just collapsed. We saw the collapse of Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, regional banks, corporate, just going into tailspins, currencies being absolutely annihilated, all taking place as the rug got pulled out. And what kicked it off were mortgages. Too much money out in the hands of people that really qualified, but it was kind of bogus. So it just panned and just rolled all through Wall Street and we collapsed. But look at that. Now, these were the days when I'm looking at it. So the S&P went from a high of the cash market, went from a high of 1,576, and this low was 660, I'm going to say 667. That was quite a drop percentage-wise. Well, when it was finishing cycle wave 4, so we had a cycle wave 5 to do. It was from this point that the Fed and the government started their zero interest rate policy. They needed to rescue corporate America. They needed to rescue General Motors, et cetera, et cetera. They needed to get money injected so that people had a place to work and we could save our own economic future. And they did successfully. Here's the pandemic. So when I'm doing this because I wanted to show you the perspective here. So when we're looking at this, it's like the perspective is like, that's the pandemic. Wow, I traded that. I have snapshots of the market where the Dow is down 1,700. The NASDAQ was down 700 or 800 points in one day. The S&P down 250, I think it was, in one day. And then, boom, the Fed. Interest rates are going to zero. Injection of capital, boom. And that rally didn't stop. So what creates each one of these moves, Elliot couldn't tell you. It's not like my analysis shows that interest rates should do this and do that, and the economy should do this and do that. What it does tell me, how are people going to react? What is going to be the human emotional response to a giant injection of capital? Well, you buy. We've been saved. What happened here? A giant injection of capital. And it was stimulus after stimulus after stimulus, if you remember. And you see what happened? We went vertical. So here we are at the S&P at the pandemic low. Again, this is the cash market, 2191 or 2192. We topped out at 4818, doubled in 2 years. It was a vertical rally. So thinking that, okay, if it took 90 years to get up to that point in the S&P, in the cash market, 90 years, how long do we think it should take to correct all of this, to correct all the excess? And that's the part where it's like, I think if we step away from our positions, we step away from the rhetoric that comes in the market, we might get a much clearer picture. And because we can put our puzzle together, we can put our picture together, Elliott wave-wise, and it all fits. For example, I think the other thing is one thing that I've learned over my years. And by the way, please, if you got something particularly you want me to go take a look at, please put it into the chat, so that we can go do that as well. I will definitely break away and go talk about a particular stock or another index, whichever you like. Currently, we are in a primary B-wave counter-trend rally. Most people will tell me that, well, you know, these, how can we say it's counter-trend? Okay, I am going to write that down. I'm going to get to that right in a second. So my thought process is that we are in a primary B wave. Now remember, this cycle wave A is going to consist of a primary A, B, and a C. So my view is, and has been, I put my fibs up here to show where can this B wave get to, and also discuss the possibility, well, if it's an irregular B wave like the Dow did in 2008, we have potential to get up above 5,000. And I kid you not. But I presented this in October of 2022. I said, I'm not looking for that right off the bat, but these are the numbers. This is the technical view. So it can go there and we start on our way. Now, what's inside of this primary B wave? An intermediate degree A, B, and C. We're in the C wave. All Cs must be five. So on an intermediate degree, the degree one lesser is minor. So what's going to be inside this intermediate wave C? A minor degree, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here we have 1, 2, 3, 4. And we're now in that fifth wave. I can bring it all the way down, and then I'm going to go right over to Pfizer. I can bring it down, and let's look at the four-hour chart. Again, right, there's the bottom of B. That's October. Oh, excuse me. This was March. And so the A wave, so the in primary A started at the October low. The intermediate B wave completed and the March lows, mid-March, and that's where the kickoff phase came for intermediate wave C. And it was pretty nice. We rallied real quick. So again, if you just have a little understanding of Elliott, here are the minor degree. Here's minor three. The third waves normally will also divide or extend internally. So it breaks down to its own five waves. Those are going to be a minute degree. Here's 1, 2. The third extended beautifully several times. There was 3. There was 4. There was 5. Minor 3. We get the minor 4. And now we're in minor 5. So we have Fibonacci relationships that I can attach to that. And those are right here. So the Elliott and Fibonacci work together here and telling us that there is a relationship between a fifth wave and the first wave. And the first Fibonacci relationship is that they are equal. So we have equality. Well, here we have where minor wave 5 would equal minor wave 1, and that's at 45.59. This is basis to cash, because in the futures market, we're above it. So, but I run the same thing. So let me just jump real quickly over to there, and then I'm going to go to PFE. So here we have that same picture, but I'm going to drop it down to my hourly chart so we can actually see it. So here again, minor wave four, we're inside minor wave five, and we already surpassed where I think it was the 100%. Let me go back. No, it's not. 100% is up here. So minor wave five would equal 100% of minor wave one at 46.48, basically 46.50. But I can continue to build my Fibonacci relationships as we go, right? So this is the intermediate C wave. We've already surpassed 100%. And so we're meeting all of the requirements for the C wave because we've already gone past one. Its next line in the sand is actually going to be much higher. That's the all-time high. And so for C, it would tell us that it's going up here. So, and that would be an irregular B wave. That's what I was talking about back in 2008, 2009 with the Dow. We could have that same situation with the S&P in 2023, possibly. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but those are the numbers. If it were to go, this is where it would go. We'd look for it to come up into here. Now, back down here, right now, I'm really focusing on this level. And now I'm building my picture because as this wave goes, I can continue to add and build Fibonacci resistance areas. And so right now, because we've actually, let me see if I can open this up. Yeah, tough call to get it all open because it's so tight. But you can see here we have my new four of minor wave five, I believe. There's one other interpretation, and that would be that minute three comes over here, and we still have a minute four to do. That would mean the third wave extended again, right? So that's all extensions, and that's a possibility. I'm not sure yet, but I'm saying that this could be the four. So what I'm looking for in a minute wave five is, again, that equality, and we're touching it. The equality where minute wave five would be equal to minute wave one, which was pretty small, is 45.80. So in reality, I'm like, because that was so small and this, I'd have to be able to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. My thoughts are it's going to get up into these levels. They're all acceptable fib levels for a minute five. Once it surpasses this, that's your next resistance for minute five, right? Minor five, my next resistance is 46.48. Well, I get close. Right? 2.618 for minute five is 46.37, if it's according to how I'm labeled. So that's just kind of a little breakdown and day-to-day analysis so that I can kind of figure out where are we? What is our potential? Where could we possibly go? The other market that I do that in is the NASDAQ, which is crazier than the S&P. Look at this market. Now, I want to go over to PFE before I go to my next topic, which basically is some of the changes that I've noticed in how our futures markets are traded, or even how our even a lot of the equity stocks, the stocks are traded, and what is propelling them, and what is, you know, what's behind it. Now, Pfizer, Pfizer, along with the rest of the pharmaceutical, are being smacked because this big conversation that's going to be coming up, the government talking with all of the drug makers saying, you charge too much, and you know, we got to give people a break here, and et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to negotiate prices for Medicare. That's the theory. That's what I've heard. So that would mean that they're going to make less money. Now, who knows? But the reaction has been pretty much down. So you kind of have to move out to a larger picture so you start to get, well, what could it be doing? Now, if I start on my monthly max, you're going to see that Pfizer topped out in November of 2021. So it was at the height of, you know, we've got the vaccine, we've got this, we got that, and they're pushing it out, and they made a ton of money because the government bought a whole bunch. So, and it got shipped everywhere, right? So it's doing nothing more, in my view, than a pretty large correction, because I'm out on my monthly chart, and I'm going back to 1985. So if you consider, now I'm sure there was a lot of movement, stock splits, et cetera, but we're talking about a move that's gone from $1.45, according to this chart, to 61, 67, somewhere in there, 61.70. That's quite the move. And now we're just correcting. Now, The first thing, depending on if this is a 1-2 and this is a 3 and this is a 4 and this is a 5, and we're starting to do an ABC, we're likely going to be correcting either the whole move that puts us way too deep. But right now, we've already declined 50% almost, a pretty big decline. So I can start to bring this down. First of all, oops, I didn't mean to do that. Back over to my charts, please. Thank you. I would want to put up just some very basic fibs. But let's just talk retracements of this portion of the rally, which I'm sure a lot of people are doing. So common on a retracement of this size, 50 to 62%. We've just hit 50, and it's starting to really drop below it. And I'm going to bring this all the way back down to the daily. We'll still get those same lines. 2363, 250, 618. So here's that 50. We dropped below it. We went back to it because it's an anchor now. That's a 50% retracement. So if you're going to get bullish, like you're going to get a bounce, you did. You got a dollar bounce. But is it done? Well, now we're down to our daily chart, and we're going to be looking to count likely 5 waves from here. That would be a 1 and a 2. Is this the start of a third? Or coming off, was this the third? This is the 4, and we're coming down in a 5. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with a new low. I would consider that, you know, pretty strong low. But was it enough? That's going to be the question. We had a gap in there. I'm not sure when Pfizer reports. So, you know, this, I'm going to say, was something. Earnings couldn't have been. They were June. So we're now doing second quarter earnings now. So I'm not sure when they reported first quarter. In any case, that's what they're hanging their hat on. The fact that we did 5 down, we should get 3 up. Was that enough? That's my daily. Let's go down to the 4-hour chart and look at that same thing. We can open it up and we can start to peel it apart. Right, here we go. Here's our beautiful. So the gap obviously was the same, and it came on some type of a figure, I think. Or no, it could have been earnings. I don't know. But boom, got smacked. So if we're starting there, could actually be 1-2, and that just was 100%. So I might go that way. 3, 4, 5. And this, oh, look at all that. Those are a lot of tails. And often I'll tell you one thing that I do, I'll go down and I'll go to the line chart because I want to see. When we're doing candlestick charts, you get all of the anomalies, I call them, where it was a sudden burst, like they ran it down and then they bought it back up real quick. Here, they ran it up and ran it back down. So you get that big, huge tail, a topping tail. And so it gets very difficult to begin to trade within it. And I'm sure it was very, very difficult. And here we have even more of what was going on inside all of this. And then we get that 3 down, and then we get another 3 up. So it looks like, I don't know, it looks like it wants to go down and retest at least this low. If it breaks that low, it should go down and retest 35.35, which was the low from July the 7th, with the possibility that it could break that. Then you got to go back out and see where your next fib is. And your next fib is going to be 618, and that's down at 30. So you'll be able to put fibs together within it, within the move, to give you a little bit more clarity. But right now, based on the bigger picture, your fib levels are 36, 36, and then 30, 38. So the potential of another $6 drop in Pfizer before you would see a more sustained, stronger move up. It's just an immediate. I've not done any dissections of Pfizer or, you know, what the company does. I know what they do. I mean, you know, the pharmaceutical company, but in terms of, you know, what their profit potential, what their forward guidance, all the different things that you can base stock movement on or what people are going to do. But if I had to go on what the human emotional responses are, they're not happy. A lot of traders are bailing on pharmaceuticals on the basis that they're going to have to come to terms with you're not going to be making so much money. And that's difficult. So that was that one. Now, something I'd like to, between anything else that people want to take a look at, this market has been dynamic in terms of the rally that we've seen recently. That's strength. I mean, this is an hourly chart. But if I go over and you just look at your charts, you bring them down to a 15-minute chart, and you're you're basically, I can actually do it from here. These are my, this is just intraday. This is from 5:30 Pacific time. Look at these moves. Boom, boom. And what really happened right about there, Microsoft announced that they have a new price point, a new product or something that they're going to be delivering to a lot of their corporate clients or just, you know, the like corporations that use this product, and they're going to be charged for it. And they're going to be charged like $30 a head, who's ever you're going to be using it per user. Boom, the stock. Over here, the stock jumped. Let's see where it's trading now. Well, now it's only up 18. It's been $3 higher, so it's been up $21. $21. So what is its range today? It opened at 3345, almost 346, traded down to 342, and then got that news and jumped. Now, Microsoft is one of the heaviest weighted stocks in the NASDAQ, is one of also the heaviest weighted stocks in the Dow and in the S&P. So when that thing takes off, it affects the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ. And I'm not sure if it's inside the Russell 2000, you know, because these are supposedly mid-cap, and they're certainly not, and Microsoft is not a mid-cap. It's a big cap. So, but the other indexes roared. The NASDAQ just pick up and went. And the NASDAQ was trading lower at the time. So it was trading around 15,750. I mean, I can go over and take a peek. Oh, wrong charts. Excuse me again. Let me back this up. Right there. It was trading at 15,775. Look where it is. 15,945. Huge move. Huge. And as a trader, as a day trader, oh, you just want to catch it and ride it. Let's remember, the NASDAQ, it's in quarters. So it trades, you know, let's say, for example, 15,900, 15,925, 50 cents, 75 cents, and then the dollar. Now these moves, so it's 20 US dollars per dollar move in the index. So let's say you could get in at 775 and you held it all the way. Let's say you were magnificent and you got 100 points out of it. Well, it's easy to do the math, 100 times 20. It's a $2,000 trade on a one lot, And let me tell you, that happened in 15 minutes, right? There's this one. That's actually less. That's 8:32 Pacific. And this is 8:48 Pacific. It happened in 16 minutes. And this is why I became a day trader. You know, when you can capture these types of moves, they're dynamic, whether you caught it in here or you caught it in here. Now, what I also want to bring into focus is we have volatility. And volatility used to just be more involved with how options were going to be priced, because the volatility index was based on the option movement within the OEX, which was the S&P 100 30, 40 years ago. So the index represents, in my mind, how fast the market can move. So high volatility, there's more fear, what they say, fear in the market. The market is likely declining, and that everybody thinks declining is bad, declining is negative, we only go up. But to be honest with you, volatility in and of itself comes in both directions, right? But the index itself will register a rally by going down. So they say that under 20, the markets are complacent. They don't really have any fear that we're going to decline. They feel that everything's glorious right now and everything is running on all cylinders. Is that something we should believe right now? Questionable. Now, add into that the VIX, when it first came out, it was just an index. And I do have it here. It's just, I got too many things. Actually, I don't have it on this one anymore. But the VIX is just an index. Nothing's traded on it. It's just an index. The VX is the future on the index. And there are options on the VIX. Oh, sorry, the VIX doesn't. The options are on the other index. Here we have them. And they expire on Wednesdays. So my point that I'm making here is that if we just pull that open, and I can maybe go like here, it used to tell me all of the different volatility. There we go. Here we have this, the volatility index, the ProShares short-term futures and volatility. We have the midterm future and volatility. We have the short-term futures ETF shares outstanding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have one-day volatility. That's where I'm going on this, folks. One day volatility, the whole product lives from day to day. Here we have one-year volatility, three-month volatility, et cetera. All of these products based on the VIX. Then we have the VXN, which is the volatility in the NASDAQ. We have another one for the Russell. You have the S&P. You've got et cetera, et cetera. We have a ton of products, and they all trade. Now, options. We used to call them, and we still do call options, derivatives. But are they? Are they really? Yeah, they still are considered a derivative. But it almost seems like right now, let me go back over. Let's go take a look. Oops. And I'm going to be doing this quick because I got to wrap it up. When you're looking at here, you've got the SPX options. Look at this. July 18th, 19th, 20th, they expire every day. And in fact, on Friday, which is the July, no, it shouldn't be, but it's a Friday expiration. We have an AM and a PM expiration. So it must be the third Friday. It is. It is the third Friday. So we have our monthly expiration that expires in the morning. Then we have the daily expiration that expires in the afternoon. But then we have Monday an expiration, Tuesday an expiration. So every single day we have an expiration. So today, here we got this great move going. Look at all the options. So these are now considered zero DTE options, 0 days to expiration. It expires today. You can come in basically at the start of Globex or when these options start trading, you can trade them. And you're not going to get exercised because the exercise is this afternoon when the markets close. Then these expire and they settle into cash. So they become very popular, and they're popular with the larger trading firms, larger banks. These are heavily, heavily traded. Now, not only do we have zero DTE options in the SPX, we have zero DTE options in the ES, which is the futures. We have zero DT options in the spiders. You want to see volume? Let me show you volume. Now, is it what's wagging the dog, so to speak? We always thought that the derivatives were a product of how we traded within the index or the underlying. It seems to me, look at this size. 161,000 spider, 451 calls. Right? What was the low? 450. Wow, these have come to life, right? That's a huge move, right? If you bought those at 50 cents, you're in some decent money. And look what happens. 267,000, 297,000, 247,000. Now, each one of these things has a delta, a gamma, theta, et cetera, et cetera. Volatility play, that's the new thing. So we have what they label as the dispersion trade. When that is going on, it goes in two ways. First, it would be they're selling the volatility of the index, bingo, VIX index. And they're taking the proceeds from that, and they're purchasing volatility of the underlying. And we can see that today, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Netflix, you can just look, you can see they're moving in. Whatever the reason is, they're moving in. So the reverse of that is that they buy the volatility in the index. Now, think about the action. What happens when the markets go down, when the indexes go down? Volatility should climb. So if I'm reversing my trade and I'm now going to buy volatility of the indexes, it's because I feel that the indexes are going to go down. My trade is I'm going to buy that and I'm going to sell the volatility in the underlying, the component stock. So you want to have an indicator when you're seeing this type of a dispersion trade happen, and particularly when you add zero DTE options to it. The second thing that we need to do, we look at the deltas, of course, that tells you, you know, what happens to your position for every dollar move in your underlying. Then there's gamma. It really behooves you to understand what gamma does, understand how gamma functions within these markets. And this is where I'm going to wrap this up. And I really appreciate you all listening. Because this is the markets in my view right now. Yep, you could say, oh, I'm bullish, I'm bearish, or my opinion is bullish or bearish, but it's like, folks, these things are trading according to numbers, not bullish and bearish. It's numbers. You put the numbers together, you make your money, you get out, you're on to the next trade. You do the same thing, wash, rinse, repeat. These algorithms, they're not moving as if they're bullish or bearish, but they can put the trade on, and the action of the trade produces where, what have we seen recently? NVIDIA just go up and go up and go up, right? And you wonder why? Look at this. Look at this move. Yep, we had a correction. Had to. That was them reversing the trade. Here we come back in. Now they're putting the trade back on. They reversed it, then they're putting it back on. There was a nice sell-off this morning, and it caused the index to drop down with it. Microsoft came out with the news. Boom. Everything took off. Now, let me wrap it up by saying that I purposely do not say I'm bullish or bearish. I'm looking for continued upside in these indexes. I don't think the indexes have topped yet, but I approach it in a little bit different manner. And as I do with the stocks, you know, there's going to be a myriad of reasons you're going to hear it all about, but right now it's just the numbers. It's the numbers. If I go over and I look real quick, and I am watching the clock, David. If you go over real quick and you take a look at NVIDIA options, which expire Friday, boy, it's called premium game. Look at the premium. It jumped. It jumped quickly. So when you're dealing with these options, and let's just take a peek, 475 is the at the money. $10. So in essence, if I'm buying that and I'm the one who sold it, I'm selling you the right to purchase from me 100 shares of NVIDIA at $475. But in essence, because you're paying $10 for it, you're paying $485 for that stock. Now, what's my game? I'm going to sell you that volatility, that premium, and I'm going to buy this, which puts me long that put. And you can do the math to tell you where you're going to be long that put, right? I'm selling this to you at $485 a share. And I can buy it at, let's say, 476. It's $9. Automatically, I got 45 cents of premium. It goes real quick because the stock's moving. But if I'm an algorithm and I've got my marching orders, you get that trade executed before you even realize it's happened. This is what's going on in our markets. Are they bullish? No, it's the numbers. And they walk away with bucket loads of money. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. I really appreciate you guys listening. And understandably, my time is up.